Calls the Committee on Consumer Protection to order for the Oregon State Legislature. It's Wednesday, February 14th, 2007, Oregon's birthday as such. And today we have a public hearing scheduled on House Bill 2568. But before we go that far, I'm going to open a work session for the purpose of introducing a committee bill.
Mr. Chair?
Steve, would you give us a brief description of the committee bill? I've been asked to do that, and I haven't done that in the past, and I apologize to the listening audience who's wondering what these committee bills are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. LC 2644 permits insurer to issue liability insurance at preferred rate or premium to construction contractors without violating prohibition against fictitious groupings.
I believe that was one of the workforce
construction claims task force.
Correct. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we adopt LC 2644 as a committee bill.
Representative Bonamici moves that we adopt LC 2644 as a committee bill. Any discussion? Any objections? LC 2644 is so adopted as a committee bill. And I'd like to close the work session and open a public hearing on House Bill 2568. Steve, would you give us a brief little summary of House Bill 2568?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2568 requires seller of new motor vehicle to give purchaser written notice disclosing the presence of a motor vehicle event data recorder.
Thank you. And if we could have the bill sponsor, Representative Galizio, I believe would like to introduce this to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. Happy Valentine's Day. Happy Oregon Statehood Day. So on your desks...
And if you could introduce yourself,
Mr. Chair.
If you could introduce yourself for the record, Representative.
My apologies, Chair Holvey. I'm State Representative Larry Galizio, House District 35.
Thank you.
So on your desk, there's written testimony, but I just want to let you know that I'm not going to read verbatim the written testimony, although there will be elements in that written testimony that I will use and say. So if you're the kind of person that likes to sort of follow along, I'm not going to be reading that verbatim. So I just wanted to warn you and try to prevent some confusion. So I'd like to start with a little narrative. This is actually a true story. I read this in a popular science magazine in 2004. It's a story about in October of 2000, James Turner, who is a theater manager from New Haven, Connecticut. And when I say a theater manager, I don't mean he works giving tickets at a movie theater. We're talking live theater. He was going to go to Portsmouth, Virginia to check out a play to see if he wanted to bring that play to his theater in New Haven. So he hit the accelerator on the Chrysler minivan that he had rented in New Haven, and he hit about 70 miles per hour. And while he was driving about 11,000 miles above, four Navistar Global Positioning System satellites were picking up signals that were transmitted by recorded by a transmitter inside his vehicle. And so by the time that Mr. Turner had returned to home in Connecticut, his bank account had been debited an extra $450 by the car rental company. It turns out that the data recorder inside his car, plus the global positioning system satellite, and the fact that his credit card was with the rental company fined him basically $150 for three separate speeding violations, and that was automatically debited from his account. So this was not the police were not doing this. This was the car rental company. So his total bill was $646. So this was a surprise to Mr. Turner. Now, this turn of events was possible because of two technological innovations, right? Apart from the car, but global positioning systems, which many people are familiar with, GPS, and also event data recorder technology, or EDRs, which are less well known in the subject of this bill, House Bill 2568. Event data recorders, or EDRs, and if I can just use EDR as the acronym, they're often compared to the black box recorders that we all are pretty familiar with in terms of airplanes. They can record as many as 16 different parameters, such things as vehicle speed, whether or not you're using your safety belt, if the turn indicator was on, whether cruise control was on. When an accident occurs, the EDR preserves about 5 to 20 seconds prior to the crash in terms of those parameters. So the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, or NHTSA, estimates that about 65% of automobiles in 2005 have these EDRs, or event data recorders. Still, few people purchasing cars know that such a surveillance device is inside their vehicle. In fact, this past Sunday, I called five car dealers in the Portland metro area. My wife is getting a little worried because she said, "We really can't afford to get a car. What are you doing?" But I wanted to call to see if any of the salespeople knew what an event data recorder was. Out of the five car dealers that I talked to, one of them said, "Oh, is that the black box thing?" So one of them was vaguely familiar, and I asked him if they disclosed this fact to people when they purchased the car, and he said, "Well, I don't, unless they would ask. I have no idea." So the dealers weren't really conversant with the technology, and they didn't know. One of the, and in fact, that car dealer asked me if I was an attorney because I was asking this question. I'm still trying to figure out if that was an insult or not. But anyway, while the main purpose, well, actually, before I get into that part, I did, and this might lose me any kind of votes, just I had my my staff do a little reconnaissance in the parking basement downstairs, and they looked at all of your cars. You have nice cars, and especially you, Representative Gerard. So and we found that of those of you on the panel, only two of you actually have EDRs in your car. The Buick LeSabre and the Saturn have EDRs. But anyway, I just thought that was interesting. Just FYI.
Did the governor's car have it? Excuse me.
Pardon me?
Mr. Chair, may I?
Does
the governor's car have that?
We did not. Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, we did not.
Didn't check that.
We didn't check the governor's car.
Okay.
But if he can be helpful and that information can be helpful in passing this bill, we'll take a look.
Okay.
So I have a list of all the cars that have them anyway. If you're it's mainly American cars, by the way. So the main purpose of this bill, the main purpose of the EDR, is to get information after a crash has taken place. And I just want to make it really clear that public safety is of the utmost importance, and this bill does nothing in terms of preventing that information about crashes going to NHTSA. The concern, though, among many consumer and privacy advocates, and that has led to some 20 state legislatures with legislation either passing or pending, there are concerns that third parties, primarily insurance companies, maybe overzealous prosecutors, might use this data against the driver of an automobile. So, like I said, about 17 states have actually passed legislation barring insurance companies from using EDR information to set automobile insurance rates specifically. So while EDR technology is useful for public safety, there's no doubt about that, and for the analyses of crashes, Like all technologies, it's not perfect. It's made by humans, and if any of you have any kind of technological apparatus or apparati at home, you know that they cause problems. So Bob Kreeb, who is a chair of the Society for Automotive Engineers who studies EDRs, explains, the information from EDRs needs to be interpreted and validated. The data can be misleading if you're not a seasoned accident reconstructionist. EDRs detect movement when its principal direction is forward. However, movement related to side and rear impact crashes are often not detected by EDRs. When a vehicle is rotating, spinning, or skidding sideways, the information is often not even detected. However, EDR information is being used in court to settle insurance claims and to find fault. So there are some concerns among engineers. The bill before you focuses really on two things. One is disclosure, and two is ownership of the data. In other words, when you buy that car and it has an EDR and it does that surveillance, who owns that data? So the bill does several things. Number one, it requires sellers of new vehicles to give written disclosure to the purchaser explaining the type of data recorded by the EDR. Number two is it provides that the data recorder is owned exclusively by the vehicle owner. It cannot be used or retrieved by anyone else without the owner's written consent. And it explains that insurers cannot condition payment settlement of an owner's claim on an owner's consent to retrieve the data. Also, insurers cannot require the use of data as a condition of providing a policy or lease. So again, these are all, this is, I think 17 to 20 states have similar kind of legislation. Sections 4 and 5 of the bill provide numerous exceptions. Probable cause, court orders, emergency medical situations, as well as voluntary disclosure of such data. So if any of you have OnStar or any of those technologies that use the global positioning and you've subscribed to that service, that's obviously consent, and this bill does not. In fact, I specifically say it. That's fine, obviously. So you know, all technologies do have unanticipated consequences. So, you know, while the automobile permits us to travel great distances in a short time, traffic deaths, pollution, and the costs to individuals and the environment are such, you know, perhaps unanticipated consequences. So, the concern is that the EDRs are useful and effective for gathering data for crashes, and that's fine. The sort of area that this bill is concerned with is ownership of that data, the surveillance of your habit, your driving, and also, you know, the subsequent use of that data. Now, and I'm almost done here. In the last 2 days, I've been in communication with some folks from the insurance industry and the automobile dealers, and I've done a little bit more research. And so there are a couple things, a couple caveats, where we're going to need to do some, probably make some amendments. I was talking to Dave Hendrickson in Legislative Council, and you'll see on the testimony that I've provided for you, there are a couple of on the third page there are URLs or links to information from NHTSA and the Department of Transportation. I didn't want to print out a 207-page report on rulemaking by the Department of Transportation, so that's what the first link is, the rulemaking at the federal level. And also NCSL has some information provided for EDRs. What's come to my attention, which is very important, is number one, in terms of the rulemaking, the federal government had meetings, Department of Transportation and NHTSA had meetings with automobile dealers, manufacturers, consumer groups, in terms of figuring out what are the best rules to make vis-a-vis EDRs, because there's a goal of some kind of standardization for the technology so that when they're doing crash analyses, we've got some standardization. So originally, the Department of Transportation and NHTSA said, all right, we want standardized laws for the manufacture of EDRs and for the type of data that it captures so that if you're in a crash in Illinois or you're in a crash in New York, the information that NHTSA and the Department of Transportation can gather is the same. Manufacturers pushed back and said, hey, it's going to take us some time to make changes to these EDRs. So the Department of Transportation and NHTSA gave them until September 1st, 2010 for compliance, for standardization of the technology and the manufacturing of the EDRs and what information it will capture. So that makes sense. Problem is, in terms of disclosure kind of got dragged along with the manufacturing and technological concerns, and disclosure and compliance with disclosure to the consumer that these EDRs are in your car also got a compliance date of September 1st, 2010. And the federal rules are trying to preempt the state. So, even though here we are, February 14th, 2007, according to this rule, if we wanted Oregonians to know that when they were purchasing a car, that there's an EDR which is surveilling their driving habits, the federal government is arguing that we can't do that. Even though it's going to take them 3 years and 7 months before there's actual, you know, law that says you must disclose to consumers, they're hamstringing state law. It appears, and again, there's some kind of questions about this. It appears that they're going to hamstring lawmakers in the states from mandating disclosure requirements. So this, to me, is one of the most frustrating things, because as a lawmaker, I would like people in my district to know that there's this technology in their car, that this information is being recorded, that it could be used against them in a court. But according to this federal rule, the disclosure might not be able to happen at the state level. So talk to LC, and we're probably going to have to change that disclosure requirement. What the federal law says, or the federal rule, is that in your owner's manual, there will be a paragraph that will say that you have a EDR in your car. And we might not be able to do anything beyond that. So that's been a little frustrating. However, the second element, in terms of insurance companies or third parties being able to use this information, this part we can do something about, and it's going to be a central part of this bill, and we're going to have a discussion. And I'll point you, and I'm almost done here, to page 2 of my written testimony. The bottom, there's a paragraph beginning this rule. In the 207-page document by NHTSA and the Department of Transportation making rules, they said, this rule, i.e. preemption, does not address certain other issues generally within the realm of state law, such as whether the vehicle owner owns the EDR data, how the EDR data can be used or discovered in civil litigation, how the EDR may be used in criminal proceedings, whether the EDR data may be obtained by the police without a warrant, whether EDR data may be developed into a driver monitoring tool, and the nature extent that private parties, including insurance companies, car rental companies, automobile manufacturers, will have or may contract for access to EDR data. So, bottom line is, the state and those of us as policymakers can, and I would argue should, have law that concerns ownership of the data. If you're being surveilled in your own car and you've got a technology that does that, you should control and own that data. If you want to give written consent to a third party to look at that data, you can do that. Again, it's being used in courts. There are concerns that it's going to be used against folks in terms of insurance companies, and the technology is such that, and we see this with all kinds of technologies, there are unanticipated consequences. And I'll leave you with one, something else that I found last night. There's a company, and those of you that are parents, maybe you want to use this. I don't know. I don't know what kind of relationship you have with your children, but there's a technology called CarChip. And using the EDR technology, you can expand the amount of time that is being monitored. So instead of the 5 to 20 seconds before a crash, you can surveil the driver's habits for about 300 hours. So it's being used by some parents who want to monitor their children's driving habits, because you can download it to a computer and you can see if little Johnny was going 120 on I-5. And so for some, that might be a great thing. But it also obviously raises a lot of concerns from people. So in sum, although it appears that we might not be able to do anything about disclosure, and I think that's a shame, and I think it's reprehensible that the federal government is telling us we can't disclose to Oregonians for 3 years and 7 months, there's going to be no disclosure that these things are in your cars, even though 20 other states have done something. But number two, we can do something, and this bill is really focusing on control of that data. If you're being surveilled in the Plaid Pantry, there's a sign that says you're being surveilled. I mean, that's something it looks like we can't really get on that. But in terms of control of the data, and it's your car and you own it, that's what this bill is really going to be focused on. So with that, I will end.
Thank you, Representative. Sure, there's got to be a question here.
Yes,
on the committee.
Of course.
Representative Girard, we'll start down there with you.
Oh, thank you so much, Chair Holvey. The question I had is, I really like to kind of caught my interest, the story about the rental car and the three speeding tickets, but this bill doesn't address any of those concerns, does it?
It does not specifically focus on the rental car companies or the GPS technology. Number one, I believe either there's federal law dealing with the rental car companies, or the case of Mr. Turner, the last I heard, was still going on. It was like 4 years in the courts. So I think when LC was looking at this, there's either current law that concern is probably obviated, although I could be wrong on that, and if not, we should add it. And also, a car rental company, I think after this, is certainly going to disclose the fact that this, but it's a good question.
Thank you.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how did Mr. Turner enjoy the play?
Chair Holvey, Representative Bonamici, touche.
I actually have a question. Yes. About the relationship between these and the GPS, which I happen to have in my car, because the way I'm reading the definition in Section 1A, I can't tell if the purpose of retrieval after a crash only applies to part of it. I just don't understand the relationship between a GPS and this. Is this going to apply to my GPS? Even though it's not necessarily for the purpose of retrieval after a crash, but it does do some of the things that are within that definition.
Right. I think the key part for the GPS or OnStar systems or any of that is Section 5 on page 2. Excuse me. Section 6, where they talk about... Well, 5 and 6, actually. Subscription services to the owner of a motor vehicle for in-safety and security communication systems. So I don't know if GPS would constitute or be considered a security communication system.
Not on your car.
I don't think it would be. And that was, So, I mean, the purpose really is, and the way we described it, to LC, and I think the way they wrote it was, it's really focusing on the EDR, and it doesn't get to anything with using a global positioning system. So in Section 6, it really is focusing on kind of the cell phone tracking. There's technology, you can do cell phone tracking, and Section 5 is about the OnStar systems, and I don't know if security communications, if GPS falls under security communication systems.
Follow-up. Thank you. I think my concern is more with the application of the Act because of the definition of motor vehicle event data recorder. Because the GPS systems do record information. They store information relating to direction and location. So I would like some clarification.
To flag, yeah, and maybe Chair Holby, Representative Bonamici, maybe either the definition needs to be tighter or it needs to explicitly use the words global positioning system are. So, have
Thank
to ask
you.
LC.
Mr. Chair, can I ask one more?
Certainly.
Thank you. Representative Galizio, in your research that you were doing on this issue about the federal preemption and no rulemaking or no rule applying to this until 2010, I wonder if you ran across any reasoning behind that, because obviously you have a list showing what cars have these, so it's not secret. So what's the problem with requiring disclosure? Are there some reasons for that? And it seems to be public information.
Chair Holby, Representative Bonamici, I think it's a really good it's a good question. I mean, number one is, unfortunately, although it is a lot of cars have it, most people don't know that they have it. Even car dealers don't even know. So that's part of the problem. That's another really, quite frankly, reason for the bill is I think people should know about this technology. But the argument was, and this is, I think, insulting to consumers, quite frankly, and I'll read directly from if I can see where. Basically, they argued, and I don't know if I have it in front of me. Basically, they argued that they didn't want confusion and information overload. They wanted standardized language in terms of disclosure. So, you know, some states are requiring, you know, either the automobile dealer tell people when they purchase a car, hey, this has what the Department of Transportation and NHTSA want to do is have a standard paragraph in your owner's manual, you know, the thing that you read from cover to cover, that will have a paragraph that will say,
like the statute.
Right, on page 8, you know, on page 97 of your owner's manual, there will be one paragraph. So, but their argument was, we need standardization of the technology, the manufacturing, the data it captures, mm-hmm. and the disclosure. And their argument was they didn't want confusion. They didn't want information overload, which to me is not the the great. Actually, I found it. Here's what it says. I'll quote directly. It says, additional disclosure requirements on vehicle manufacturers or dealers would create a conflict and therefore be preempted. We have devised an appropriate statement for the owner's manual to make the operator aware of the presence, function, and capabilities of the EDR. Inconsistent or additional state disclosure requirements would frustrate the purpose of our regulation by potentially creating confusion or information overload, thereby reducing the benefit of the required statement. The need to meet different disclosure requirements for different states would also increase costs, making it less likely that manufacturers would provide EDRs. So I guess they're saying that it would increase the cost, it would create confusion and information overload if we in this body said that, hey, in the 3 years and 7 months prior to the disclosure rule going into effect, we might confuse the people of Oregon. So.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair. Representative Galizio, thank you so much for being here today. It's nice to see you again. Okay. On this bill, I'm very confused, but what's usual. Is the purpose of this bill to protect the privacy of a buyer of a new automobile?
That is one purpose, yes. I guess you could say that is one purpose of the bill.
Thank you. Follow up? Could you please give me the additional purposes?
Sure. And as I said, Chair Holby, Representative Nelson, good to see you too, by the way. When I had the bill drafted, my primary goals were really twofold. Number one is to require disclosure so that a consumer purchasing an automobile with an event data recorder would be notified of the technology that is surveilling their driving, and that if they, you know, and just to talk about the technology and let them know that it's in their car and this is what it does, these are the capabilities. So number one was disclosure.
Excuse me.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, I want to be sure which one is number one. Is number one really to protect the privacy of a buyer of a new vehicle?
Chair Holvey, Representative Nelson, I mean, the term privacy obviously has, you know, large ramifications, so I think potentially you could say that falls under privacy. Is there, I mean, I don't want to get into a, because I can't, a full, you know, the legal discourse about privacy. We have folks who could, but it would, well, primarily disclosure, right? In other words, arguably you have a reasonable expectation of privacy in certain areas, and I know that there's a camera right there, and it's, I know that. When I go into a Plaid pantry, for example, I know that there's a camera. It says somewhere that you are subject to video surveillance. So right now, when you get in your car, there's technology that surveils your habits, but you don't know it. So I'll let you decide whether or not that concerns privacy.
Okay, follow up, please, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Okay, well, I really appreciated the first statement, first time, you know, when you said, yes, that was the purpose of this bill, because I think that should be the primary purpose of this bill.
A purpose, yeah.
Excuse me?
A purpose, yeah, one purpose.
Yes. I guess I'm just saying from a consumer's viewpoint, looking
gotcha.
At this bill,
thank
that
you. Thank
to
you.
Me, I would appreciate that. Okay, but secondly, what I'm concerned about are the broad sweeping provisions, as in Section 4. On my car, when you were checking it out to see if it had the ERD in it?
Chair Holvey, Representative Nelson, that wasn't me, that was my staff.
Oh, okay, your staff. Well,
although I do like your bumper sticker.
Oh, that's what I wanted to be sure to saw my bumper sticker.
Yeah.
It says, no tracking my car. And that's why I don't have an ERD.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Just wanted to, you okay. might explain that to them, because I doubt they understand why.
Okay, all right.
Okay, I am concerned. First of all, we're talking about disclosure in this bill. If that's the primary purpose, then we turn to something beyond disclosure, in that this act becomes one in which we're allowing various agencies, various individuals, to use our data that we have just been protected from being disclosed. And I'm just concerned. I don't think... you know, the Department of Transportation needs to use my car to pre-clear way stations, to be a part of their automotive driving record business, for fuel tax. This has nothing to do with generating revenue, and as far as complying with the state or federal law, I mean, that's already
yep.
automatic, but it shouldn't give the Department of Transportation the authority to see that I comply with state or federal law.
Yeah, and Chair Holvey, Representative Nelson, I think you're going to hear testimony after me. There's agreement that perhaps some of that should be taken out of the bill.
Great. And just one last follow-up. Thank
certainly.
You. That makes me happy because...
That's my goal.
Oh, good. Okay. But I wanted to say, because before I am sitting in that same position with another bill that's coming up, I want to be sure that I don't sound like I'm hypocritical. But I have a bill that's called Dalton's Law. Did I ask for permission to talk?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And this bill came out of a death of a friend of one of my sons. It's a man took his new car. He was kind of depressed and was supposed to be driving to Palm Springs. He didn't arrive. So my son's immediate concern was, I know that's a new car. I knew it had OnStar. Why can't the state police or the sheriff's office, you know, require OnStar to tell them where that car went? Well, they couldn't, and they found him 5 days later at a motel dead. And his name was Dalton. And it's really sad. So I think that this should read, because now that bill I have gives the law officials the right in an emergency to demand the use of this data. So I am just thinking, you know, here that we should call this, you know, Section 4 in time of emergency, or requirements that law enforcement has the right to request this data. But otherwise, without that, nobody can have that data but me. But what happens when somebody buys my car and it's going to have my data on it, if I had one, and then the additional data, or does, is there a way to erase it like the odometer?
Yeah, Chair Holby, Representative Nelson. The way it works, the EDR, is it sort of constantly erases. So if you have a crash event, it then captures that sort of 5 to 20 seconds, and then it sort of constantly erases. So your information most likely would sort of go away. However, as I said before, there are other technologies that people are using linked to the EDR that allows you to capture hours and hours. So unless you rigged your car to change it, it tends to erase it, you know, sort of each, it erases it for the most part. But on the other hand, I think it's something to think about. So, and I'm sorry to hear about that.
Other questions from the committee? Representative Galizio, before you get down, I just have a couple of questions, if you may. I was just curious if you could show me where that black box on the Buick LeSabre is after the committee's over.
I want it.
So, other than that, I thank you for. Oh, you have a question?
I just thought of another question.
Representative Bonamici, sure.
Representative Galizio, I recently learned about something called LoJack, and was touted as a great theft prevention device because it can be installed on a car, and then if your car is stolen, the law enforcement can find it immediately. Is that the same thing?
Chair Holby, Representative Bonamici, probably some of the similar technology, but it's different. And ostensibly, if you had something like that installed in your car, you would certainly be aware of it. But I think that's more where it's distinct. It's different. It's different. But it's the same. I think it brings up the same kind of, some of the same technology. But ostensibly, you know about that you affirmatively got that in your car, and so you know and you want that, and that's why in Section 6 and Section 5, if people want OnStar, if they want the ability to have that location, they can do it. But it's a little bit different technology. And, you know, the last thing I just wanted to say is with, you know, that link to the 207-page report, when I was reading the in terms of the disclosure requirements, that's on pages 131 and 132, and I think it's really important. It's when you read that and you see the federal government's logic for why we shouldn't be able to disclose, it's pretty alarming. Pun intended, I guess, or maybe it's not a pun. But.
Thank you very much, Representative Galizio. Fascinating, riveting subject. Next up, I'd like to call Mr. Cosgrove and Mr. Campbell. If you could come up together, that would.
Alarming. Here come two alarming men.
I have three copies of my testimony brief, one of them.
said 21 copies.
Mr. Chairman, Paul Cosgrove representing the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers, the trade association of nine of the world's leading auto manufacturers. And my written testimony covers just the three policy principles that the Alliance has with respect to EDRs, event data recorders. One, that they're important. They can improve the understanding of crash events and lead to improvements in safety systems. But we agree that the data, this is point two, should only be accessed with the owner's consent or as specified in law as it is in this bill in sections 4 and 5. And we don't take position on what purposes it should be released without the owner's consent, but that those matters should be dealt with in legislation dealing with this, that the principle of owners owning it and requiring consent, and that the exceptions be clearly stated in the law. And then the third thing is, as Representative Galizio pointed out, the rules adopted just last summer by National Highway Traffic Safety Administration define what an EDR is, and they specify the disclosures that manufacturers are required to make, and that the state laws that address those issues, including the 10 states that have laws on those two issues, are likely preempted. I've attached to my one page the executive summary of the 207-page rulemaking packet that Representative Galizio mentioned, which states why NHTSA believes EDRs are so important as a traffic safety matter, and briefly described the elements of the rules. But I also, the last piece of paper, the back of the second page, that starts with section 563.11, is in fact the specific disclosure that NHTSA is requiring manufacturers to put into their manuals starting in 2010. I guess I'd like to just make one other comment about the compliance with respect to disclosure. The industry has, I'm quite certain, been complying with 10 different state laws on 10 different disclosures so far. Obviously, for reasons that you can well imagine, it is much easier for us to have one common disclosure. But I think we are also working to get those other laws of those 10 states into conformity with the federal law. We're not interested in having battles about preemption. We would like to have one agreed disclosure, and it'll take some time to get the other states' laws back into conformity, but we do expect that that task will be ongoing over the next couple of years. There haven't been any of those laws that have been passed since the rule was adopted by NHTSA. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, I think we'll hear from Mr. Campbell first, and then maybe we can ask both of you questions, because you probably answer pretty close to the same.
Very similar. Larry Campbell, representing General Motors today, and we appreciate your concerns regarding consumer protection, and want to share some of the what we think may be unrelated consequences of this particular piece of legislation. You'll note in signing up for testimony, we did not indicate that we were opposed or in favor of this bill, and the reason for that is that we're not really sure how this bill will end up. We recognize what Representative Galizio pointed out to you folks, and that is that there are changes that should be considered, both to meet the standards of the federal law, plus there are some concerns that we're going to share with you that we would hope you'd keep into consideration. We will be more than happy to work with a representative on any of the areas, specific areas of concern that we have if you are interested in having us pursue changes in the bill. Let me refer to the attachment that I've provided, my very short cover sheet, identified as the Event Data Recorder Fact Sheet, General Motors Corporation. And after reviewing this document with you very, very quickly, we will be glad to respond to questions. I was not sure how many of you really had a clear understanding of what EDR is, and so consequently, I've asked our client to basically give us a rundown of what it is and why we're utilizing it. And as you can see by the General Motors fact sheet, The EDR's main purpose is to record data for retrieval after a crash and will assist in the understanding of how the vehicle safety systems perform. And that is the major interest that manufacturers have, is to make sure that we can identify how the vehicle safety systems have performed. The example that was given regarding, and Representative Galizio has already cleared this up, regarding a rental car, there is no tracking, for example, intended with the EDR unless there is an actual crash scene. The amount and type of data recorded can vary by model of car and vehicle line, but it will generally include information about the condition of the vehicle and how it was operated, such as engine speed, brake application, throttle position, vehicle speed, safety belt usage, airbag readiness, airbag performance data, and the severity of the collision. And by the way, with General Motors, our OnStar does work in conjunction with this for reporting to emergency services. And sometimes that's extremely important because of the short time it takes to identify the need for assistance. Data is not continuously recorded, and that is really a clear misunderstanding of a lot of people. Data is only recorded during a crash event where the vehicle experiences at least a small amount of deceleration. Data is accessed either through the vehicle's diagnostic link connector or directly from the SDM. Crash event data where airbags were commanded to deploy are permanently recorded in non-volatile memory. Event data from crashes that are not severe enough to deploy the airbags, hitting a pothole or that kind of thing, are stored in non-volatile memory temporarily for about 250 ignition cycles before the memory is cleared. Data is accessed through the vehicle's diagnostic link connector or directly to the SDM. That gives you a little background of what kind of data you get, why we set it up initially to achieve this data report. What is GM's policy regarding EDR data? And I think this is extremely important. And as you deal with legislation, I would hope that you would consider this policy, because we found it to be very effective. To retrieve electronically recorded data, special equipment is needed, and access to the vehicle or the device that stores the data is required. GM will not access information about a crash event or share it with others except, one, with the consent of the vehicle's owner, or if the vehicle is leased, with the consent of the lessee, in response to an official request of police or similar government office, as part of GM's defense of litigation through the discovery process, or as required by law. If you'll go to the next page, there are about three paragraphs that I want to particularly identify with. The first one is, analyzing data related to the performance of vehicles during crashes is essential in developing future safety improvements. To design and engineer safety improvements into our products, researchers and engineers analyze the physics of the vehicle, the dynamics, the severity of the crash, the restraint system, and the use of physical characteristics of the occupant and the extent of the injury. I want to skip then to the third paragraph, which says EDR data is an important supplement to the information obtained from physical crash reconstruction. For example, physical evidence such as tire skid marks are typically used to assess pre-collision velocity. But for newer vehicles equipped with the anti-lock brake system, the tire skid marking are very difficult to detect and may not be documented in crash reconstruction. Then if you'll go down to EDR data is quality data, the second paragraph in that section, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration understands the value of EDR data and is expanding its use in crash statistics. When the data is aggregated and loaded into databases, NHTSA has an important additional tool that helps it meet traffic safety needs in the United States. If you'll then turn to the third page, again, I'm going ahead because of some things that I think are extremely important. Crash data helps emergency response and rescue, and this is the thing I was mentioning about OnStar. When coupled with the advanced crash notification system, crash data can help the emergency response and treatment. Emergency rescue providers, medical and trauma providers, and other EMS decision makers can use crash data to improve field triage decisions. And then the role of EDR data in vehicle recalls. And you'll identify here a whole series of recalls that were basically determined to be effective and important because of the data that was received by the EDR. So we see from the standpoint of a manufacturer who is basically interested in improving safety the importance of this particular issue. We are concerned, depending on how the bill is written, as to what effect it will have on our ability to continue to operate in this manner. And so, like I say, we're extremely pleased with Representative Galizio pointing out that there are undoubtedly changes that need to be made in this bill, and we would hope that we would have an opportunity to work with he or whoever on his staff would be interested, if you feel that we should go forward with this, to make sure that the unintended consequences don't happen. And with that, I close my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to know what non-volatile means. Non-volatile memory.
It's the opposite of volatile. Mr. Chairman,
I've had enough. Let me ask Mr. Cosgrove. Would you know? Let me ask the smart one of the two.
The same chairman, Nelson.
Touché. I don't know either.
We'll wait for Mr. Powell.
I do believe I know something that may in fact be the definition. It has to do with how long the data is kept and how permanent the record is for these pothole kinds of accidents where it starts to collect it because it might lead to an accident that will go away if there hasn't been an accident, the serious effects. Where it's a serious effect, an accident, and a deployment of the airbag, that data is recorded and kept there so that for accident reconstruction at any time it'll be available. And I believe that's what the difference between volatile and non-volatile data is. I have Representative Riley shaking his hand, so I feel comfortable that I may be close to that.
If I may.
Representative Riley, please.
So.
Volatile is exactly that. It's memory that can be erased and is ever-changing, thereby volatile, ever-changing. Non-volatile means static.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Chair.
Yes. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. I have a question for Mr. Campbell with regard to the use of the data currently by General Motors. And I thought it was interesting, the use for example, accident reconstruction and recalls. Is the data, once it gets to General Motors, all kept together, or could, for example, a car owner who is in an accident that led to litigation contact General Motors and say, I need my information, can you give me what came from my EDR, or is it all combined?
Actually, in the case of General Motors, they used 4,000 cases, which, as I understand it, were not identified with a particular case. It was the information that was provided. My guess is, and this is only a guess, Representative Bonamici, is that individual would have to get the information from a General Motors dealer who can provide that information because they have the equipment that they can take the information off the EDR.
Thank you.
Questions? Representative Galizio. Well,
just on that point, the vehicle identification number, the VIN, is kind of the link to the owner of the car. So that's sort of there's in some statute in some of the states, and I honestly, I've looked at so many different bills, I can't even remember if the one that I'm sponsoring even talks about this, but where they, to prevent, you know, the identification of the driver and linking it to that data when they're collecting it for just analyses of crashes just in the aggregate, is they only use like the last five or so digits of the vehicle identification number. So, but may I ask a question? Thank you for testimony. I guess one thing I wanted to get on the record, and kudos to General Motors, your client, because when I was in the report, it said that General Motors actually suggested that the disclosure statement that NHTSA and the Department of Transportation wanted, General Motors thought it didn't go far enough and it didn't give consumers enough information. So I just want to say kudos to your client. But I wanted to ask you a question, Mr. Campbell. It says in your on page one about EDR data is quality data. And it says, unlike subjective human observations of vehicle crashes, I know we always like to think that technology is perfect and that even though humans are the ones who construct and monitor and interpret technology, I guess I don't understand how this is considered, well, to follow the theme, non-subjective or objective, because as I testified, the chairman of the Society of Automotive Engineers said that the information needs to be interpreted, validated, it can be misleading, and it doesn't always. So isn't there an incredibly subjective element to this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Glezio, I can't answer your question, but I will be more than happy to inquire and see if I can get an answer for you.
Other questions? Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Campbell, I really agree a lot with the need for this data for safety and for future safety improvements. The only thing that concerns me is that what concerns me about a lot of data gathering is that its purpose is great. And if that's all it's ever used for, that's wonderful. It always concerns me that the person who invented this for whatever purpose doesn't always then control it. And the purpose can change over time and become intrusive.
That's true.
And that concerns me some. Do you have any response to that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riley, the chairman and I were talking earlier today, and to our knowledge, we have not found examples of where anyone has been disadvantaged by EDRs. In other words, other than that which would be allowed under the law. And so one of the questions really is, with the approach that's being taken and the fact that this is relatively new and that all automobile dealers are not on board with EDR at this point in time, we feel that there are some advantages to waiting until we see how it washes out before we actually have the type of legislation that Representative Glezio is concerned and interested in.
Quick follow-up, if I may.
Follow-up, Representative Ryan.
And the under-the-law part is the part that bothers me. when you say other than what's allowed under the law, as we well know, many things that we wish weren't allowed under the law really are, at least things that I wish weren't allowed under the law. Disclosures to who? Whoever the lawmakers decide, whoever the rulemakers decide, which is even worse.
Right.
And so those are the things that concern me about any data gathering that occurs.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riley, that's one of the things that concerns us about legislation relating to this kind of thing, is because the best intentions are there, but what happens when the legislation passes and effectively we tie someone's hands or we untie hands that shouldn't be untied?
I agree. Think of that school mileage, what was that, 25 miles an hour thing we did? Mm-hmm. You did, I guess.
No, I wasn't here.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to ask if either Representative Galizio or our witnesses could anticipate a time when the technology would allow us and the public education would allow us at the point of purchase. I'm thinking particularly of a new car. You could be buying a brand new GM car where you could opt out at that point, because you both had the awareness and knowledge of an EDR, And technologically, you could just not put it on the car. I don't know if it's integrated with other systems, or you could just you could get to a place where you could say,
it'll be
I don't want
the law.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gilliam, right now, not all models of cars have ADRs, and I expect that the industry will continue to have those options for consumers to the extent consumers express a preference for that. But there are choices now of certain models that do. If you want a particular model and it has an EDR, I do believe it's relatively difficult. Or I mean, it's not a plug-in unit, if I recall.
Not
correctly.
Like, excuse me, the follow.
Follow up, please.
So that's where the comparison with a black box doesn't
fall short. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't quickly take that out of the system without disabling a bunch of other things.
I believe that's correct.
I no longer change my oil, but that's another
Representative Bonner.
I just wanted to make a comment in response to that. When I was learning about the LoJack device, I was told that when it's installed by the dealer at the dealership, it can go into more than 30 different places in the car, and they specifically don't want the car owner to know where it is.
Really?
For purposes of tariff, Mr. Chair?
I'm not really sure why.
I'd like to ask Representative LoJack a question.
Trying to get this committee back under control here. But Representative Gilliam, if you have a question.
No, please. I don't. I'm sorry. No,
okay. Right. I should get under control.
Well, can I just ask one? Oh, go ahead, Fred.
Representative
Gerard. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. There has been some talk about removing Section 4 of this bill. You would concur with that, would you not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gerard, Section 4 deals with two, I think, quite different kinds of disclosures without consent. One is to the Department of Transportation for some nice purposes, but not necessarily the most critical public safety purposes. The first part of it, Section 1, A through C, deals with law enforcement, and I think you might want to take a look at those as separate kinds of issues. There may be some reasons that law enforcement need it that the Department of Transportation does not. However, as a matter of the official policy of the Alliance, we think that's a matter for you as policymakers to make that decision. What, if any, state agencies, what, if any, purposes should this be released to where the consent of the owner has not been obtained? Because that's what Section 4 is. Without the consent of the owner, these people can get it. And that, we think, is an appropriate position for you to, or situation for you to look at.
Representative Nelson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you opt out of this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson.
Said I won't. No, thank you. On my car, I'm buying it from you, and I want to say I want to opt out of that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, I as I said in response to Representative Gilliam's question, I don't believe it's particularly easy to disengage an EDR on a modern car, but you still have the option of buying a car that doesn't have an EDR. The federal government has not mandated EDRs and at this point, so there are models that do not have EDRs.
Can I follow up with Representative Nelson's question? Then, do the automobile manufacturers provide all their models with the choice of EDRs or no EDRs, or are there just specific models that don't have them and some models that do?
Eventually, all of them.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I know. I'll find out. I shouldn't guess. I would guess not. I would guess that a model either always has it or another model always does it. But I'll find out, Mr. Chairman.
There's your list of all the cars that have them.
How long has this been going on, Mr. Chair?
Trust me, I don't know. So, any further questions? You want to ask that question, Representative Nelson?
Yes, please. Give Mr. Kellogg a chance to use his intelligence. How long has this been going on? I'm upset to know that I could have been driving with one of these on my car, and by dang, nobody disclosed it to me. How long have they been putting this stuff on our car without us even having the right to opt out of it? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, I can tell you that I'll find you a specific date that the first manufacturer installed an EDR. It was not a particularly common occurrence until earlier in this decade. The NHTSA rulemaking was initiated because it had become quite common by 2004, and it was concluded in 2006. The rulemaking, federal government rulemaking, takes a long time. So I'm certain it preceded that, but I don't know how much before that.
Well, I'll jump in. Representative Galizia was kind enough to hand me a little chart, and you know, clearly some models have been doing it since 1994.
You've been
driving a Cadillac.
I was. I'm glad I got rid of it. With the lemon. That's why. See, that's the electronic mess that goes astray in those cars.
Do I have any further questions of these gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make one comment in closing. And
certainly, Mr. Campbell.
The comment was raised about how you could track your children through some of these new devices, and my big concern is that my children might be able to find out how I drive.
Yeah. Thank you, and for that. And you know, it occurred to me that if these black boxes could really track whether drivers were using cell phones, it might be useful to this legislature too. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next up, could we have John Powell and Sean Miller?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm John Powell, representing State Farm Insurance Companies. Mr. Chairman, first, in terms of setting the stage for our comments, I want to make sure that you understand our interest is not in monitoring over time anybody's behavior in their automobile, and our comments will be restricted to the EDR, going back to the General Motors testimony of a device that records a very short period of time and freezes if there is an impact great enough to set off airbags, etc. It is recorded over. It is volatile, about as volatile as being at a cocktail party and telling people you represent an insurance company.
Wow.
That's pretty
that volatile.
That
and
is.
Mr. Chairman, as I was sitting here listening to the testimony, I recall a policy adopted by the legislature just a few years ago that would conflict with this policy that hadn't come to my mind before, and that is there is a very healthy tax credit for an insurance company who would insure you by the miles driven as opposed to other rating factors. That there was an experiment in Texas with a monitoring device that kept track of miles driven, and which would be necessary in order to make sure that premium went to people who actually drove a certain amount of miles. That's still on the books in Oregon, and that would rely upon a transmission device. No insurance company, to my knowledge, is doing that now or even contemplating it, to my knowledge. However, it does show you that as part of the previous discussion, going one way with technology and then wanting to go another way. And I think that the proposal that was forwarded at that point was by the Oregon Environmental Council in order to promote not driving. That is, the more you drive, the more you pay, which is one of the rating factors in most insurance rating. The second thing I would like to make clear is that insurers, again, to my knowledge, no insurer wants to use an EDR for rating purposes. Again, the amount of data on there would be insufficient to make any kind of judgment on rating. So we are narrowed down to crash impact data. And Section 3 of the bill is very, very restrictive in terms of an insurer, and most restrictive would be the subsection 2. That you could not, an insurer in working with indemnification and replacement of an automobile, would not be able to require the cooperation in this case of the driver in getting consent. We agree that the driver owns this information. That the question is that for you, the policymaker, is in rare cases, and I have Steve Merle, who's a claims attorney with State Farm, with me. I talked to Paul Danner, who I report to in State Farm Corporate. To their knowledge, there's never been an incident in Oregon where they've tried to seek this kind of information. But it could be that the only way to find out what happened or reconstruct an accident that occurred without witnesses in the middle of the night and perhaps everybody was killed would be this kind of information. And before the hearing, I did mention to Representative Galizio that we'd be glad to work to see if there isn't some way to limit this access, because we're not, again, it would be very expensive for an insurance company to access this data. They do not have the personnel on staff, so they have to hire outside people, and it would take the cooperation of perhaps even the manufacturer to translate it. But the bottom line is we will work with your committee and Representative Galizio and see if there isn't something we can do to allow only in some kind of a case where it would be the only methodology of reconstruction of what happened. We do support the kind of data gathering for highway safety. We do think that's valuable. And if you remember back to the rollover, and I don't want to disparage a manufacturer, but one of the major manufacturers had an automobile that seemed to roll over all the time. And this kind of data can be helpful, I think, in the search to solve those types of problems over time, which would measure swerve and that sort of thing and freeze that data. Again, it wouldn't be specific by the person's name. It would be a collection of the data in a blind manner. So that, Mr. Chairman, I would simply stop and answer any questions you might have.
Sean, do you want to... you mind if we
go ahead.
Mr. Miller first?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Sean Miller. I represent the Property Casualty Insurers Association, PCI, with about over 200 member companies that do business in the state of Oregon. And John did a good job of just illustrating some of the concerns we may have on page 2, section 3, on line 7, when it talks about a settlement of an owner's claim. And, you know, looking at the EDR, just at that limited crash impact data, there could be some circumstances that could happen if this were to pass in its current form, where, you know, it's obvious to us when our insurance companies have a policy and issue a policy that the insured is supposed to obviously cooperate on when there's an accident. And I think, as John stated, we're going to have in most cases the consent of our insureds when we need to actually see something, if we need to. And again, that's a very limited circumstance. However, in some cases, and I'll use the example where, you know, there's I won't use myself, I'll use John. He's driving drunk, and he's driving 85 miles an hour. He crosses the line, and in the wreckage, the other driver is killed. And in that instance, knows that he's at fault. I mean, clearly, you know, he's fine, but he knows that he's at fault. There could be a circumstance in that case where he'll say, no, I'm not going to consent and cooperate in that instance. And understanding that, yes, we're not talking about he does own the data, but there is going to be some circumstances there that we could think if this were passed in its current form. And what I've asked our folks nationally is there some language to address or deal with some of those issues? And, you know, I offered the same thing to Representative Galizio and the committee to kind of look at that further. But we have a little bit of concern that could happen on the passage of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Galizio?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, Mr. Powell, on the tax credit, it would seem that would be the the owner would, there would be the owner's consent. In other words, if that's something that I wanted to get a tax credit for, the miles driven, and that's how my policy is going to work, it would seem that that there would be consent there. So I guess I don't see the...
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I do believe it prohibits you from issuing a policy on a condition providing something like this. So I don't think you could say, well, if you don't want our policy, go get it somewhere else. In other words, I think with this wording, you could not refuse on that basis. You couldn't say, well, we're going to be keeping track of you this way, so give us your consent, or we won't sell you the policy. I think the bill prohibits that in its current form, and we could work, that could be worked around.
Okay. Can I follow up, please? Another question? And this is, the more you drive, the more you pay for insurance, and but you said there's probably insufficient data, and insurance companies are not interested in that. But arguably, that would be useful information for insurance companies to have, because the more miles you drive, the greater the risk or chance that you're going to get in an accident. So maybe it's not used like that now, but arguably there is the potential. And the statement "require the cooperation of an owner" is just one of those great statements for me. But how do you require cooperation? It's, to me, that's almost an oxymoron. But I guess my bigger question is in terms of either the drunk driver or the case where people get in an accident and everybody perishes in the accident, in the section 1 of the bill on subsection B, when it talks about owner, it says, who is the attorney in fact, conservator, or personal representative for a person described in paragraph. So wouldn't that, in other words, if everyone perished, wouldn't the conservator or the, you know, another family member or something be the person to whom they would seek consent? So isn't it already in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Galizio, that is in the bill, but I don't want to get confused with the questions. Number one, on the rating portion, again, we're not talking about having access to global positioning data here. And that's why when I started my testimony, I said we're talking about these few seconds.
Yeah.
That there's no way that data is worth anything for rating.
Right.
The accidents occurred, and if an accident counts against you in your rating, that would be what would be the rating factor. It would not be the data we're talking about. And in terms of the definitional part, that is our only concern here is that part of the data, not your global positioning, not OnStar, and all that. We don't want access to that. But that would be the kind of technology that if you paid by the mile. Mileage is one factor currently in rating. The reason insurance companies have not gone to something like this beyond the technological part is that mileage driven is not the only indicator. Age and a whole bunch of other factors together give you a better risk allocation than using any one factor as that legislation would require. So I do think that it would be in extremely limited circumstances where this information would be used. But in the situation you gave with a conservator, obviously, if everybody was killed in the crash, they weren't there. And again, there are no witnesses. And so they couldn't help reconstruct the accident in any way. And that would be the only purpose for trying to look at data at that situation. And cost alone would keep it from being used in any kind of quantity.
Really quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is it feasible in your mind that the information on the EDR, that 5 to 20 seconds, could be the only information that is the primary information that he's used to find fault. And if that's the case, following up to that is, do you think this is a perfect technology?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Galizio, no. In any kind of a fact-finding situation, this would not be the only information that would be used. You know, positions of the cars and a whole host of things would go into that. This would just be one more additional piece of information in that fact-finding.
Thank you. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions, the first being about consent. And do you foresee writing into your policy that consent is required if under this policy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, I think the bill would actually say that we could not do that. And so I don't think on condition of having a policy, I think it's when we would need consent in a claim situation under those very narrow circumstances. And so I don't see any company, and I haven't heard of any company that says, you know, we want to make sure we have use of this information anytime we want it. I think in these very limited circumstances is when it could be of use.
Follow up,
please.
So you're saying that you would be requesting consent at the time of an accident or something, and further, what I heard you say was that you want something to compel people to give you that consent, and the reason, and if they don't, have some consequence. That's another. Is that what I heard you say, and is that your intent?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Riley, if it's impossible, and these are the circumstances under which this might come into play, if it's impossible to for us to adjudicate a claim without some information like this, the only consequence would be if the owner failed to comply, would be an estrangement in terms of us settling the claim and being willing to settle the claim. That would be the only consequence. We would not have a way of forcing the person to consent, but if they did not fully cooperate in the adjudication of the claim, there could be financial consequences.
Follow up. Financial consequences sounds like real consequences to me, and so I think I got your answer. Thank you very much.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you. I was going to let this go, but something that Mr. Paul said made me feel like I needed to ask this. You were talking about cases where, excuse me, you said you really needed the information. But in light of the fact that not all cars have this, couldn't it just be treated as you would handle any claim in a car or an accident without an EDR?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonamici, yes, that's accurate. And, again, that's why this would not be the sole factor in determining fault or outcome of a claim. It would be just like some accidents have eyewitnesses and some do not. Some accidents involve two cars, some one, some five, some 25. So each and every claim has a different nuance to it. Again, if the facts exist or if the eyewitness is there, we would like them to testify to what happened. And that's the same with this information. But again, this information would rarely, and as I said, we're unaware of a situation in Oregon where it was ever an issue.
Have a question, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, I've got Representative Gerard down here.
Oh, thank you.
Defer. he was first.
I just want to make sure I get a little bit of this straight. If, for example, there was a two-car collision and you suspected the car that you did not insure, I mean, the person that wasn't insured by some or was insured by someone else, you're not asking for access to their EDR, are you, or not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gerard, Under the even under the bill, a court it could become a legal issue in litigation. I think the bill would require litigation to occur before people would have a right to seek access through a subpoena for this type of information. But it's important to remember the role of an insurer in an accident. There's a contractual agreement between their insured and their insurance company. That insurance company is obligated to defend them if they're sued, mm-hmm. and obligated to give them the best possible defense. And so in the case of litigation, it could be any party asking for this kind of information.
Follow up. Okay, so in Section 4, A, then you would like to see that retained.
In Section 4, which, Sub A?
Yeah, Sub A. It says a court order to produce the data.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I don't know why that was put in there, other than there could be all kinds of reasons for that, including criminal reasons for determining some of this information. And I would assume that limiting a court's ability to seek the truth is something that would not be desirable.
Go ahead, follow up, Representative Girard.
Actually, that's without the consent of the owner. So the court,
exactly.
The court would, under the, what some of us are concerned about is the bill restricts what an EDR can do, but then in Section 4 it tells you where it can be used, and some of us are more concerned about the where it can be used than we are about where it can't be used. And so Section 4, A, talks about, you know, that the court would still have the power to subpoena the EDR, and so that would follow with what you were saying, that you feel that as an insurance company you would like to keep.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know how important that would be other than to the system of justice.
Okay.
And again, if the information is there and it's found to be valid in determining a dispute, then I would think that you would not want to foreclose the ability for the system to operate that way, in full disclosure of the facts of the situation.
Just one last question. So if somebody like myself has a problem with Section 4, you're not opposed to the deletion of that whole section, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Girard, I think the issue that you're getting at on the exemptions is a little different than Section 3 that we were dealing with, where an insurer may not have a condition in the settlement of claims. If that's in there, I think we might not even be able in a court situation get a court order to obtain that information. So I just don't know. Something I'll have to explore. But I think for our purposes, the language would have to be changed in Section 3 of the bill.
Okay.
I don't necessarily know if Section 4... if we even get down there, if we can solve our issues within Section 3. That's a good question. I don't know the answer.
Representative Riley.
Just one final comment, if I may. If this goes forward, I'd like to see us have the only exceptions be with consent of the owner or court order.
Me too.
Any other questions from the committee of Mr. Powell and Mr. Miller?
Thank you
so much for your testimony today. Next up, to finish our panel on this bill, short
bill,
Dave Fidanke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have laryngitis.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be a short testimony, though.
You won't ask any questions.
I will be trying to whisper loudly directly into the microphone. for the record, I am David Fidanke, Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon. Can you hear me okay? Testifying in support of the bill, although I should qualify that we have a number of concerns with the current language of the bill, including the provisions of Section 4. And I'd like to start by echoing what Representative Riley just said, which is that we believe the fundamental principle here is twofold. And the spirit of this bill and the conversations we've already had with Representative Galizio is that there are two things. One is that purchasers and people who lease vehicles have a right to know what type of surveillance equipment is contained in the vehicle that they are purchasing or leasing, so that they can make an informed decision about whether or not the positive aspects of that technology outweigh the potential loss of their privacy and having other people know how they have been driving and potentially where they've been driving. And the second, we believe, equally important principle that we see in the bill is that people should not be coerced into giving consent to disclose this information or turn it over to other individuals or corporations who may use that information to their detriment, and that there should be limitations on access to the information by the government and by other parties in a dispute, unless there is consent, and that the best arbiter in those situations, we believe, is the court and the judicial process. In terms of more general comments, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there are a number of emerging technologies that have, that we believe, raise grave concerns for the right of people to move about from place to place without being subjected to warrantless surveillance by the government or by other private parties. And event data recorders are just one of those methods of technology. GPS tracking is another. And we believe it's critically important for the legislature and for your committee, Mr. Chair, to be educating all of us about what technologies exist in order to determine what safeguards should be put in place for consumers. Because the reality is that the technology has been moving much more quickly than any of us fully appreciate. And so we feel very much indebted to Representative Galizio for raising this issue in this session of the legislature, and we look forward to working with him and with you and other members of this committee as you refine this legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? We're all taking pity on your voice.
It sounds much worse than it feels. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on House Bill 2568? Any other comments from the committee? I want to thank Representative Galizio for bringing me this rather simple, easy, short bill to discuss today.
Just a technical bill. A couple changes there.
And I appreciate all the input from everybody that came forward. It's actually a little more interesting than we anticipated. So with that, I'd like to close House Bill 2568 and adjourn the committee, the House Committee on Consumer Protection.